This is Audrey Omamo. Welcome to another episode of One on One. Over the last couple of years, my next guest has paved a name for himself on the internet. Some may know him as, it's Joe. My guest today is a content creator. He's a podcast host. Today, I have the pleasure of going one on one with Joe Volpes. This is Audrey Omamo, and I am so happy to be going one-on-one with Joe Volpes.
Number one, baby.
Hell yeah.
Number three guest, but number one in our hearts.
Oh, I love that. Joe, how are you?
Lovely. I never do podcasts.
I really appreciate your time and you driving out to my house and doing this with me.
Do you, in the past 6 months, since I started doing mine again, I haven't done any. And I was like, I should probably be on the other end just to see how it feels again.
Wow, I feel honored. And now I have a lot of pressure on my shoulders to make sure that this is incredible. But I've known you for a couple of years now, and we've worked alongside each other with just different projects. And I've always just been very drawn to you just because I feel like you and I think very similarly, and we have a similar approach to like content creation and life and just what we're trying to build. So I just wanted to get in your head and just see how you think and how you got to where you are right now.
Dive in.
So let's talk about your upbringing. What was that like?
I was trying to say something funny. It was good. It was cool. I always had a camera in my hand. So I was really fortunate at a young age to know kind of what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened to be the next big thing. And I've said it before, but I'm so fortunate that it wasn't like horseback riding that drew me in, because that hasn't blown up yet. Mm-hmm. But filming and editing, and I kind of discovered the internet at a really early age to the power of it. Mm-hmm. And right from my very first videos, I was posting, I think as a sophomore, and the upperclassmen who were on the internet also saw my videos, and they'd come up to me and they'd say, cool video. And that was just like,
wow,
the coolest reach that I had. And this is in like 2008, 2006.
Whoa.
And I didn't realize like that was just happening. And I felt like I almost had the secret little community of people who messed with me and like thought that my creative thing was cool.
Do you remember the first creative thing that you saw that kind of made you want to say, you know what, I want to pick up the camera?
It was Blink-182 did these tour diaries. Uh-huh. And Sum 41, like I was really into music, and some of them had CDs, and it was basically like a tour vlog.
Yeah.
And it was so poorly edited together, but it was like 30 seconds of a moment, 30 seconds of a moment, and it came together, and you really got to see these people's personalities outside of the music. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And I would buy CDs specifically for that enhanced CD.
Wow.
Because it came with that bonus CD. And I thought, this is so cool. And I started going on to YouTube, and from there I found Smosh and this other sketch group, and I thought comedy sketches were the funniest thing. And it kind of drew me into, this is something that I wanted to like do, because I never liked like the school activities. I didn't, like I wanted to get out of there as quickly as I can, but I loved hanging out with my friends and doing fun stuff outside of that. And I never really drank or smoked, but that was like my outlet to pass Friday nights.
Was your family supportive about you wanted to pursue this?
They were supportive, but it was scary. And in their defense, when I was 18, I said I wanted to go out to California. We didn't know anybody, and they didn't really want me to go because it was so far away, which was completely true. And it was so new that my dad told me to go to New York. Like, I can do the same thing in New York, which for me, you couldn't really do it based on what I saw and what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like, also, California was always just the lifestyle that I wanted.
So at the time, though, what did you want to do? Was it more like music industry kind of thing? Or was it more like, let's be more creative, like, let me be on camera kind of thing?
I never wanted to be on camera. I always wanted to be behind the camera, because I like, there's only so many things you can be good at. And for my strengths, it was the creative idea and capturing it and putting people in the lens and the composition of it. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, I just knew like, that's what I was good at. That's my thing.
Yeah.
And that's what, I always go for the path of least resistance.
Right.
Because if I can just chase my strength, like I'll land somewhere positively. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I always tried to do.
See, but how did you get in that headspace like so early on? In a lot of ways, was this a sink or a swim kind of thing for you? Like you had to make this work.
I didn't have to make it work, but I think because I saw, I'd film videos with my friends, and when I'd hand them the camera, it's like my head is chopped off and they're not filming the frame at all. Yeah. And when I grab the camera, it's perfectly shot and I'm thinking about the sound and the light and all these things that just came so natural to me were not natural to other people.
Yeah.
So I always was able to get other people to be in my videos, but it was hard for me to be in the camera because I'd have to watch it back and be like, do one more, but like make sure that this is like, oh, you got to do like, that's completely backlit. Like we got to switch the angle.
You're paying attention to the little things that they may overlook.
The little things that make the video worth watching.
Wow. That's interesting. So would you kind of like dissect every video that you would watch and say, you know what, like I could probably do this better?
Yeah, and I still do that every single time.
It's freaking sick.
When I'm at the gym, I put on my podcast every single day. And from when I started redoing it in August, literally to this morning, it's like, okay, I got to zoom in on her angle a little more. My backdrop could be a little better. There's not as much color on her side. There's so many different things that go into it to make it fun to watch. Because Brandon Rogers, who's another hilarious content creator, not another, he's a hilarious content creator. He says that if something interesting isn't happening on screen, something interesting needs to be heard. So I try and just make sure that something is always interesting, like to visually see.
No space.
Yeah, because that's kind of when you lose somebody. And even if you think about it, when you're scrolling through TikTok, what are you scrolling through and why are you scrolling through it? Like, why is it not capturing your attention?
Yeah.
Maybe because it's not lit properly. It's dark. You don't see what's going on. There's no text to capture your attention. There's just so many factors that go into trying locking in that person throughout the whole video.
Mm-hmm. And speaking on that, like obviously we're in 2024 and the evolution of social media and these platforms is evolving very quickly. In your opinion, do you think it's hard to create content in 2024?
I think it's harder to get into it because as a newcomer, you have to try and factor in all those things. But if you become obsessed with it, you can try and figure it out. When I first started doing my podcast run, now I keep saying this because I had a partner in my podcast and then he left, but then I wanted to keep going with it because I always love podcasting. So it went from just me and my co-host to now me and a different guest every week, which is completely different. And I had to figure out how to make that interesting because at the end of the day, I'm also interviewing other people now. So I have to try and figure out a way to get that new audience who's there for that guest to tune in for the next guest.
Mm-hmm.
And it there's just a lot of different factors that you have to think about now to try and make it seem recurring and try and get the person to want to come back.
How do you stay authentically you though when you're constantly trying to maintain these viewers?
The recurring factor is always going to be me, so you have to be authentically yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from the very early stages of YouTube when I was shooting for other people was that you have to create something that you truly love, because let's say it blows up, that's the one thing that you have to keep doing.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to pivot out of there. So the one recurring thing is me, and I've only had people on that I'm genuinely interested in. So whether it's somebody from a reality TV show or a former CEO or just a friend, I'm asking the questions that I'm interested in, that my age group might be interested in, that my audience might be interested in. And regardless if you like the guest or not, somebody always has something interesting to say about their story of how they got there.
Yeah. I kind of want to break it down. So obviously, yeah, you mentioned that you were filming for a lot of different creators. Do you prefer being the brains behind the video, or do you prefer now being the face of the video?
I don't really have a preference. I love both ends because they both have positive experiences and positive outcomes from it. Just yesterday, I shot for somebody who was doing this new launch, which I can't say. But that was the first thing that I've done like that in a while. And it's so exciting because I got to bring my gimbal that I normally don't use and my drone that I don't get to use. And I get to just be behind the camera and like, hey, let's go over here. The lighting's sick. Oh, let's run over here. Like, you have a bounce on you. Like, let's do this. So it sharpens my skills for that. But then it's also cool to be in front of the camera because then I can steer the conversation for whatever I'm trying to get to.
What do you think is the biggest difference creating like a video per se, and then on the converse, creating a podcast?
Video in what sense? What do you mean?
Like, for example, like working with another creator, right? Like you're putting that video together, you're directing that video, helping them make it what it is. And then now you have this personal project with your podcast. What's the difference in the approach to the video?
Targeting who the audience is and seeing really what they want to hear or see or understand. Mm-hmm. So if it's a comedy video, I have to approach it different than a podcast, which might be a little more intriguing. Because right away, you're trying to make somebody laugh and you want them, like, that's really the point of what you're trying to get across. Mm-hmm. But they both have pretty similar aspects of how you have to approach it.
Yeah.
And at least for me, I was like doing it in a setting where I know the battles were going to be. So is it a nighttime shoot? Is it daytime? Is the sound going to be an issue? Are we recording next to something that's going to be loud? There's just a lot of things to factor in, at least for me, that can elevate a video from like a C to a B just based on those circumstances.
Can you break down your creative process from ideation to creation?
I can only speak on my podcast now because that's kind of what I'm doing. But me reaching out to like 100 different people, saying the important things that I need to say to try and lock them to come over to my house to do a podcast.
And what people don't realize is 90% of the time, you're not getting a response from these people.
Ghosted.
And you're...
Disappeared.
It's like a loop. And then when you get that one yes, it's like, okay, like...
Oh, it's that rush.
Yeah, like you get like this high and then you do the interview and then it's like, okay, now I got to do this again. Now I got to send out 100 emails and just hope one reaches. But does that take a toll on you?
No, I have no shame. I think that's a lot that has to do with it, is a lot of people are afraid to put themselves out there, or they're like, no, that's weird. But it's not really weird, because if it was weird, nobody would have came over in the past, because right. Of course it's weird. I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
So like, to a normal person, it's like, yeah, but also I'm offering something and I'm trying to help them promote something or grow something. So it's more of a business type of thing. It's not, I don't think anything's weird. And if it's weird, you have to approach it differently.
Mm-hmm. If you had a looking glass as a kid, right? That kid that was so eager to do this.
I'm still eager to do this. I've never had a million subscribers on a platform, and I've wanted it since I was 16. I'm 34 now, and I'm going to get it one day.
You're not too far.
I'm not too far, but they're talking about banning TikTok, which kind of screws me.
As a creator that's very prominent on TikTok, when you hear news like that, what's going through your mind?
Oh, it sucks, but I mean, what am I going to do?
I mean, but let's talk about that, though. Like, in a lot of ways, this could mess up a lot of different things, right? Like, for what you're doing.
Totally.
You know, like...
I think that's a lot of my relevancy is on TikTok.
So if that disappeared, like, what happens?
You have to pivot.
See, and that's another crazy thing about you that I've witnessed. You're very great at pivoting.
Thanks.
Yeah, like for example, like when your co-host left the show, another co-host could have been like, you know what, like I'm ending the show completely. But you were like, no, I'm still going to make it what it needs to be and what you envisioned for it in your mind. And now it's like, seeing what it is now, I'm like so happy for you. It's inspiring to see what you're doing.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, because like literally first time I met you, you were holding a camera, you know, behind the scenes. And now it's like, I really see that you're passionate about the podcast.
I think podcasting is incredible. I think that long form of, I don't even want to say entertainment. I feel like it's like edutainment.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing, like you can learn so much from that long form conversation as opposed to the prior types of conversations where it's like 8 minutes and it's capped and you're not getting that full authentic conversation and the person's just there to like hit the points and that's it. Like a podcast really dives into the thought process of how people think and why they did it and how they got there.
Has there been like a favorite guest that you've had that's very like eye-opening?
I feel like everybody is cool in their own way. I think maybe the approach of how I got people is the coolest. There's this band Neck Deep that I didn't get confirmation that it was actually happening. It might have been the day of, and it was like a 50-50% chance. And they're one of my favorite bands. And wow. I did all the research and I did all my questions and I was so excited. And I'm like, my wife is like, are we going? And I'm like, I think so. We gotta wait.
Yeah.
And then once I got that email confirmation, it's like, you're on for today at 2:00. It's like, we gotta go.
It's like one of those situations where it's, you gotta stay prepared for what happens. Like,
and that's the best.
Right?
Yeah. But you also can't have your dreams crushed. Like, Insane Clown Posse was supposed to come on, but then they had to cancel that day. But it's going to happen. I want to talk to them so bad.
You just got
to
roll with the punches. You can't let that stop you.
No, not at all.
In your whole career, when's been a time that you've bet on yourself and it's worked out?
I think moving to California.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You drove here from New Jersey.
Yeah.
First, why? Like, why didn't you just fly?
I always wanted to drive across the country.
Was that everything you expected it to be?
Yeah, I know. Maybe. I guess.
Would you do it again?
Hell yeah. I'd do a different route.
Wow, that's cool.
I mean, this country's so sick. There's so many things to see and so many things to do. And it was like on my bucket list. I'm like, I want to drive across the entire country.
And when you accomplished it, it's like...
Yeah, and it was all... the way that I looked at it was so stupid, but it was like two birds. It was like, okay, I want to move to California and I want to drive across the country. I might as well just do both in the same thing.
Yeah.
And I figured I'd try California for a year, and if it didn't work out, I'd just move back to New Jersey.
That's crazy. Was it a big adjustment from New Jersey to California?
In hindsight, yeah. But at the moment, it didn't really feel like it. It kind of just felt like that was just the natural flow of things happening.
You know, there's definitely somebody that's watching this and they're probably sitting in their house and they're like, you know what? Like, if he could move to California to pursue this, I could too. What advice do you give them?
Well, I didn't know anybody. I knew my roommate who was from my town. And it just, I asked him, I was just like, what part of town should I move to? Like North Hollywood, Burbank, like there's all these different places. This Studio City where all the studios are, I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, we're looking for a new apartment in 2 months. If you wait, we can all move in together.
Right.
And he was just a guy from my town. Like, I kind of knew him, but not really. And I figured, okay, like it's probably better for me to go in with people that can like see the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than me just sign a lease and not see anything. So they went out, they saw it, they sent me the video. I'm like, cool, how much is it? They told me, they signed the contract, I moved out. And I didn't know anybody work-wise, but as soon as like I moved, I updated my Facebook status, like, hey guys, like I'm out to California. If you know anybody, please send me their name so I can like see about work. And then one by one, just people would come through, and if you do a good job, everyone wants to be the person to recommend that guy. And I tried to do that every single time.
It's amazing. Wow, that's so good. Like, that shifted my mindset right there, actually.
Because literally it was a ladder. It was like, I can still remember like who I got and who recommended me. And it was just like every other day.
Doors got opened.
Every single door was opening. It was like, I didn't get paid for stuff, but I knew that if they liked me and they liked my work, eventually they'd pay me, because like not everyone has work that they can offer right away, but brand deals were like becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. So when people got brand deals, it's like, let's hire Joe. He shot all this other stuff for free for me. Let's hire him.
Yeah.
Get him paid. Recommend him to somebody else. And then from there, just carry on like that.
Would you say that you are somebody who's always pursuing the passion?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, right?
Right. Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Like for me, for example, like I called KTLA for a year straight until they brought me on for the first time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely that.
It's more about like, how bad do you want this?
Yeah. I mean, I message the same people, like the same message every couple months. Can you come on my podcast?
Me too.
And some people say yes on the fourth message. They're like, oh my God, I didn't see that. Or yeah, I'm down.
Yeah. How do you balance creativity with normal life? For example, are you looking at everything as content?
Yeah, but not in like a, oh, this is a problem kind of way, because this was my hobby and my fun escape in the beginning, and it always was, and I feel like it always will be, because I've always had a camera in my hand.
Right.
So it's like, maybe in the sense of, am I going to post this?
How do you overcome like creative blocks?
I don't know. I don't really get those.
No, you don't.
Not really. Maybe like take like a day off, but it's really easy for me to get back into it, because again, this is just what I've always wanted to do. So it's almost like a permanent energy drink. The fact that I'm even in California is just so crazy to me. Like yesterday, I was shooting on the beach in Malibu at sunrise and sunset. And I'm like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, what a dream, huh?
That's crazy.
Cool.
It was so crazy.
What's been your favorite moment that you've been a part of? Whether it be behind the scenes or in front of the camera.
I shot a whole series with Brandon Rogers. That was really, really cool for me. Because that was one of the biggest things that I did that wasn't for me. And it was 7 episodes. We probably did it over like 6 months or 7 months. And there were 7 episodes, like 10 to 25 minute episodes each. And it, like, won awards for him. So the fact that I was able to shoot it was really, really cool. And the fact that he wanted me to be part of it, because his channel is like iconic.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was there was cool to see how he works.
Yeah, it's like you're getting in his mind, seeing how he works and how he approaches his own content.
Yeah. And for him, like, he values my opinion too. So I felt like I was really part of it, which is awesome. And it was like, he's like, I think we should do this. What do you like? We worked so fast together. And I really respected that. The fact of someone who can do it so quickly, just like me, is like, he's like, I think we should do it there. I'm like, over there. He's like, oh, well, what about there? I'm like, oh my God, that's even better. And then we like come together and created this like really cool thing. Mm. But seeing how his brain really operates was just so cool.
Being a content creator, you're putting yourself out there. And unfortunately, like, sometimes people have opinions that might not be the best and it could be negative. How do you deal with the negative comments, whether it be about your videos or about you, from people that don't know you?
I started to look at it more of like someone who leaves a negative comment kind of just like types it and then scrolls up to the next video.
Yeah.
And like that comment sits there for you for hours and hours and hours. So, and when you open up the app, it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to realize not to take it too personally.
What's the best advice you've received and from who?
In general?
Yeah.
Best advice. I don't know if it's the best, but this PR company came over with a podcast guest and he said just the kindest things of like, just keep going, like, don't stop. Like, what you're doing here is really, really incredible. And that was just like, he like really pulled me aside and like looked me in the eye. And it was a moment. I was just like, whoa. Like, the fact that he said that was really big for me, because the people that he represented were like really big names.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you're doing something right. But number two, you feel seen for what you're doing. For example, this show, if I'm being absolutely honest, it's been very hard at the beginning, just because it's like you said, like, you're reaching out to these people, they're ghosting you, you're not hearing back. And it's like, you feel like you're sending out hundreds of emails and then you're like, okay, but what do I do now? Like, the show has to work. In my head, I'm not going to let it fail, but it takes a toll on you, because it's like, you start to second guess yourself and it just creates a lot of conflict. When you're faced with certain adversities like this in your head, like, what's the most important thing for you?
Just keep going. Really just keep going. Because eventually you'll either find a way around it or the thing will happen.
Yeah, keep going. That's so important. When's the time that you kept on going when you thought you weren't going to keep on going?
I don't know. Because I think I've always had that mindset of just keep going. And like when something... I think I was doing like food reels on Instagram for a while and I was doing one a day, but after 3 or 4 months, like, literally nothing came from it.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. And I had to figure out, okay, am I going to keep doing this? Because there wasn't even like there, when you do something, like, there's signs that what you're doing is working. And when I was doing that, like, no sponsorships, no followers, like, the engagement was just doing normal, like, nothing, like, popped off.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had to figure out, like, what's wrong with this?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is it the setting you're doing it in? Is it your intro? Is it the quality? Is the quantity? And I from there, I kind of just had to pivot what I was posting, and I figured out to do more like vloggy style stuff because that's what people really wanted to see from me rather than what I was doing.
Yeah. Joe, in your opinion, how do you define success?
I think just being happy, to be honest. It's not even like a numbers thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, am I happy doing what I'm doing?
Are you happy doing what you're doing?
I'm very successful.
Yeah, me too. I love what I'm doing. This is so cool. Let's leave on this. There is definitely somebody that's watching this that sees you, that sees all your content, and they say, you know what? Like, literally, if he could do it, I could do it. What advice do you give them in that pursuit of making their dreams a reality?
Just keep doing it. Really, just keep doing it. Don't stop. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And like, you got to really self-analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
And look at yourself as the harshest critic and look at yourself as the best critic and look at yourself as somebody who's just passing by and being like, okay, what works for that mindset? What works for this mindset? And you have to try and just keep adapting and changing because the algorithm is ever evolving and changing every single day. So you really just have to keep changing it because otherwise it becomes a little stale. What you're doing now might not work in a week or a month or a year. So you really just got to like really plan ahead and think about what you want to do and how you're doing it.
What's next for Joe?
Wow.
Shoot for the stars.
WrestleMania.
You're going to get in there.
Me versus Logan Paul.
Call him out.
Logan, WrestleMania, brother. I don't know. I don't know. It's just really just keep going. Like I just love podcasting. I think it's so cool. I think it's such a special art form and I love listening to them. I think that's why it's like so cool to me because I'm such a fan of the entire vertical.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm able to do one is really, really cool for me.
Everybody make sure to check out his podcast, The Lightweights Podcast. Joe, I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
What kind of research did you do for me? What'd you do?
I did a lot of research for you.
Spill it.
Famous birthdays. I look at the oldest videos.
Does it say what year I'm born?
If I'm not mistaken, was it 1996? No.
Oh, I'll take
91?
It. Yeah, 1990.
99, yeah, right?
Yeah, but at first it was 1991. What else did you do?
Man, I just looked at all your stuff. I feel like also, though, too, like the fact of the matter that we talk on the phone, like, once a week, like we could break that fourth wall if you're willing to
share
about that. But I don't know did I reach out to you first or did you reach out to me?
I think you reached out to me and you were like, it had to be the Caleb Braxton podcast.
Yeah.
And you were like, dude, that was so sick. And then I was like, thanks so much. And then you like kept going with it. I'm like, oh, you like wrestling.
Well, that's the thing. So when I first, because obviously I've been keeping up with you and I've been, you know, listening to your podcast. So when I saw you kind of like crossing over and interviewing WWE superstars, people that know me know I love wrestling. Like the way that I got into wrestling was when I was 7 years old, I got two uncles that are 3 years older than me. That was the way that we bonded. Every Friday, we'd be sitting around like the TV just watching our favorite, like I think it was like Friday Night SmackDown, for example. We just like sit there and like wrestle each other. But over time, you know, I got to interview Stephanie McMahon and, you know, I was in that world for a little bit and I watch a lot of wrestling interviews, but the way that you approached Kayla's was just different from a lot of them. And I just needed to give you your flowers for that. And that's just, I feel like how it kind of like snowballed. So the more that you're doing these like wrestling interviews, you and I are kind of like connecting and I'm kind of helping you just like with the approach. And like, for me, it's just such a crazy experience and I'm so thankful for it because in a lot of ways, it feels like I'm living kind of like vicariously through you.
So when you say that I approached the Kayla one differently, how?
So the wrestling world is very like hardcore, meaning like
dedicated.
If there's a wrestling interview, wrestling fans are expecting you to like ask them all about like the wrestling, like what's it like backstage? Tell us about working with this person. But what I feel like a lot of people overlook is that they're actually just normal people too. Like, yeah, they're superstars and yeah, they're like these larger than life personalities, but at the end of the day, they're still like you and I. Like they're still in the airport. They're still, you know, like they're probably binging their favorite shows on the airplane. Like it's things like that that's what I kind of want to know about like them is how they just like what the normal person's like. And that's what you tap into. Like with Maxine, like Cappy, all of these people that you sat down with, Natty, like, you've really highlighted them in such a great way, in a different way compared to all these other wrestling journalists. And I applaud you because it's, for one, it's inspiring. But number two, it's just like, I know a lot of these superstars, they want to be talked to like normal people. They're not just this like one-dimensional character. It's like there's so much more to them, and you're giving them, like, you're giving that to them. And it's such a, it's a refreshing thing.
So you, as a wrestling fan, what more do you want to hear when someone's interviewing a wrestler?
I think it's just more about, obviously, like, meshing the lines of like reality and storyline, for example, but also just like, like breaking that fourth wall, pulling the curtain back. Like, what's it really like? Like, when you're standing in a ring at WrestleMania in front of 70,000 people.
Okay.
Like, are you nervous? Do you have chills? Are you like, for example, like before this interview, I was nervous. Like, even though I know you, I'm still nervous. Like, are they nervous at WrestleMania? Like, those are the questions that I'm really trying to like, because in a lot of ways, you're getting into their head.
Right.
Like at WrestleMania, you're looking around, because I was at WrestleMania 39 in LA. That's like 75,000 people two nights. That's insane. You're normally wrestling in front of like 15,000 people, and now you're wrestling in front of 75,000 people. That's an adjustment. A lot of people don't realize that. Like that's like an untapped thing.
Right.
And it's like you're really getting in their head and really like, you're presenting them as a WWE superstar, but also as a normal person. And that's where I think it's working.
I love that.
I'm telling you, like, it's just so, it's refreshing. Like, I listen to them genuinely, and it's like when you mention like Kevin Owens for Kathy Kelly, I knew she appreciated that, because it's like, you know, you could have easily just asked her about like backstage interviews and just that side, but you also just like delved into it. Like what's Kathy really like? And that's where it worked. I loved it.
Right.
I applaud you. I wanted to give you your flowers. Here are your flowers. Like,
oh, these are for me.
It's such a refreshing space. Also, just because you know this too, that industry, it's just very saturated. So the fact that you're just doing it differently and you're approaching it differently, I'm telling you, like, and I told you from the very beginning, I really think it's going to work. So congratulations. Yeah. Right? Like...
Yeah, I mean, I hear it, but then at the end of the day, when I'm like comparing it to other podcasts that I listen to, I'm like, what did I really do differently that actually resonated with somebody?
Let me ask you this though, because I know you're somewhat passionate about wrestling.
Uh-huh.
Compared to like other interviews, right? Like, how do you approach this one differently?
I think it's that. Like, I've always been so fascinated with the mindset. So it's like, when you go out in front of 70,000 people, like, what are you thinking?
No,
like, are you going to trip?
It's little things like that. Like, I just don't understand, like, why these, like, wrestling journalists, they're asking the same questions for every interview. And it's like, I know why a lot of these superstars don't do interviews, period. It's because they're literally asked the same questions every time. For example, like, it's a very similar quality that you have to, like, a Howard Stern, where you're not like only like on one topic, but you're on multiple topics and you're kind of like pivoting from each one very gracefully. And you're literally touching on like multiple things. And it's not like you're putting them in a box.
I love that.
My guy, I applaud you. I really think that like, I think you're going to be at WrestleMania.
Headlining?
Hey, Logan Paul, you better hold on to that championship tight, because Joe Volpes, he's about to slap you in your face just like the Rock slapped Cody Rhodes.
Whoa, what if he sees this? That's it.
No, just kidding. He wants to tag team with you.
Yeah.
No, but you know what? Like, let's talk about that real quick. If you could step into the ring against one superstar, who would that be? Because I think Logan Paul was probably asked the same question. He wrestled a match tag teaming with The Miz, and it's like, now he's a champion. Like, would you ever get in the ring?
I mean, I wouldn't be good at it, but sure. It would be like, I'd get destroyed.
Yeah.
Dominic Mysterio.
Yeah.
I think the way that, when I saw him live, he like stole the show.
Dude,
he was
Dominic.
So captivating.
The GOAT right now. Like, he's my favorite character right now on television.
Is he?
Yeah. Just because it's kind of like, I knew a lot of guys like that in high school. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, just the bully, like the dude that thought he was like the shit. So to see him like do that, but also he kind of like left the shadow of his dad, and a lot of people really didn't think that he was gonna like do that. Mm-hmm. And he's really flourished with the Judgment Day. So I think it's like, it's really cool. And it's a testament to him too. He bet on himself and he really made it work.
Was he in the shadow of Ray?
I feel like when your dad is a legend like that, it's just a lot to live up to. So oftentimes the children of superstars don't really reach the level of success that their parents may have.
Right.
I feel like a perfect person to like look at right now is Charlotte Flair. Like, yeah, she might've been in the shadows of her dad for a little bit, but she quickly overlapped that. Like, she kind of said, I'm paving my own path, and she did.
Right.
So I think Dominic is in the same conversation.
Interesting.
But we went off topic. I am so happy that I went one-on-one today with, it's Joe Volpis. Thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you?
Lightweights Podcast. It's going to be linked down below. Give this video a like, or else Andro is going to wrestle you on a TLC match coming this at the Thunderdome.
You are ready for me. Subscribe. I'll see you next week.
See ya.